You're listening to Stateside. I'm Lester Graham. The U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that laws regarding Michigan's sex offender registry cannot be applied retroactively. We're going to get into that a little bit, but before we begin, a note of warning. The topic we're about to explore might be disturbing to some listeners and not suitable for young listeners. Joining us is University of Michigan Professor of Law J.J. Prescott. He's an expert on sex offender laws. Tell us what this ruling is about. What does it do?
Sure. So what this law does is essentially forbid the state of Michigan from applying the sex offender registry and related laws to people who were convicted or released prior to the enactment of the law. For a long time, these laws have been claimed to be regulatory, which means they aren't really about punishing people for past crimes. They're about trying to keep people who have done something in the past from hurting people today. The Smith versus Doe case, which was a Supreme Court case in 2003, declared that registries, sex offender registries, are regulatory, not punitive, and therefore the ex post facto restriction of our Constitution does not apply to them. The real move here, the difference about this case, is that since that time, registration and the other obligations, including residency and loitering restrictions, have just gotten so much more severe that the move here was to say that was a first-generation registry law. Fine, that may have been regulatory, but it is no longer regulatory. It is now punitive. The concern here is we had Smith versus Doe. Certain things were allowed, but states should not think of that as a blank check to keep bashing on sex offenders. They have to really mean these laws to regulate and to protect the people. And what they're doing now, there's no evidence that it works. In fact, evidence that it's counterproductive. And it starts to look a little fishy when, after all these years, no evidence that it works, some evidence that it actually may hurt, and we keep expanding and doubling down in this area. And when you keep doubling down in an area where there's no sign there's any upsides from a policy perspective, you start to think this is really about going after a small group of people who don't have the kinds of protections. And that's exactly what the counter-majoritarian ex post facto constitutional provision is really about. It's about making sure that majorities, when they suddenly start to get angry at some group or passionate about some issue, can't just go off and railroad particular parts of our society.
The sex offender registry is really popular. A lot of people visit that, monitor it, keep tabs on people moving into the neighborhood, you know, just in case. It makes people feel safer. So why shouldn't we have everybody on that sex offender registry if they've been convicted of a crime in the past?
So it's certainly the case that sex offender registries are popular. It's easy for a politician to support them. But there are a few reasons to doubt whether or not they actually are something you should care about. And that's that evidence is increasingly indicating that they don't affect the likelihood that people recidivate. And in fact, if anything, the evidence suggests that it goes the other way.
So they're not going to be repeat offenders, generally speaking, because of this registry?
Well, the typical sex offender is not like what people imagine. Let's say somebody who jumps out of the bushes or a child molester. There's a small fraction of people who fall into that category. But as in the case of the plaintiffs in this case, that's not the standard case.
What other people are on that list? I've understand that if you were 18 and your boyfriend was 17 and you were convicted of statutory rape, you're on that registry for a long, long time, even if it was consensual.
That's right.
That if you're convicted of a misdemeanor, that you could be on that list for a long, long time.
That's right. So there are consensual crimes. In fact, one of the plaintiffs in this case, you know, had sex with somebody who was underage. That person happened to be underage, but also at a club for 18-year-olds and older when they met. They're actually married, as I understand it now today, and have a family. And even so, this person is on the registry. Depending on where you are and which state, it can be crimes as minor as public urination. Lots of crimes that seem sexual in nature or kind of weird, but don't suggest violence or involve a clear victim. And that's, you know, one of the problems here. In addition, a lot of the crimes that people were convicted of didn't know that this was how they were going to be treated later on. So, for example, one of the plaintiffs actually was a juvenile or went through a juvenile type sentencing program. And in order to have his record sealed, agreed to a particular charge. And at that time, the charge didn't have any of these consequences. And so lo and behold, later on, even though part of the arrangement was that he would, you know, have his record sealed, he's now publicly listed on the sex offender registry.
What's the impact of that to an individual?
Yeah, that takes us back to the main question here, which is how is it possible that something that seems so intuitively likely to make us safer can actually make us much worse off? And the answer is, when you're thinking about what causes somebody to commit a crime, it may be that if a few people in your neighborhood know you're a sex offender, that it might stop you from doing something that you otherwise might be. That's the claim people make. But you also have to realize all of the collateral consequences that these people suffer. So they can't find jobs. They can't build relationships. They can't establish families. They can't live near their families in a lot of situations. They wind up paying, often even though they're unemployed, for some of the registration that they have to comply with. And as a result, they're poor, they're homeless, they're friendless. A lot of times you'll see comments from people who live under these registries, and they basically say, my life has been taken from me. I have nothing. Ask yourself, if you have nothing, you also have nothing to lose. And so when you're thinking about somebody who's trying to get on the straight and narrow, who has committed a crime in the past, has gone to jail for the time that the judge indicated they had to go to jail for, and is now back out trying to rebuild their life, and they suddenly realize, I'm on this registry for the rest of my life. There's no coming back from this.
That's a lifelong house arrest.
And the court in this decision points that out, that much of how this works actually looks like punishment. But in terms of the policy decision here, leaving aside the law, if you really have nothing to lose, threatening somebody with sending them back to prison isn't all that effective.
Now, I got to tell you, I'd never been on the site until today in prepping for this interview, and I looked at a one-mile radius within the radio station here, the address of the radio station, and there were 41 people listed, but I have no idea how dangerous they are. It doesn't list whether they were convicted of being a child molester or a rapist. It doesn't really say what their crime was. So how do you tell whether this is a real threat to the safety of people I love or not?
So that has been a recurrent complaint about these websites and notification approaches since the beginning. They get the information out there technically, but you might have to be a lawyer to interpret what it means or spend a lot of time investigating it. So a couple of problems. One, we have so many people on the registry now that people who aren't really dangerous are mixed in with people who might be dangerous. So the 41 people near the station, for example, maybe there are two or three you really ought to know about, but how do you pick them out of the crowd? This is one of the problems with expanding the registry. On top of that, there could be a lot of improvement in the kind of information it conveys. So it might say something like CSC, criminal sexual conduct, and not really tell you what that was or what the facts were. And some of that's about trying to protect the victim, who might be easier to identify if you give more of the facts, but it also makes it much harder for users to make use of.
This law in itself, this registry in itself, has been called constitutionally vague. There's some questions about whether this should be done because, as you mentioned earlier, it might be punishment rather than, you know, just a follow-up and keeping track. We don't keep track of murderers or people who have done violent crimes of other kinds in the way we do sex offenders. So what kind of changes to the sex offender registry do you think would be appropriate and why?
Yeah, so if we start with the presumption that there are some released sex offenders out there who are really dangerous, I think that the most important thing we could do is really move to, you know, a risk assessment type of approach. So the way the law currently works is it looks at the conviction you had, maybe the conviction you had 30 years ago, and asks, do you fall into a particular category? It doesn't ask whether or not you're elderly now. It doesn't ask whether or not you have succeeded in treatment. It doesn't do anything like that. And so an obvious first step would be moving towards an individualized assessment of each of these potential sex offenders. The laws themselves are incredibly onerous. You know, there's almost a natural sort of, who cares if it's hard on the sex offender? If they're potentially dangerous, why should we care whether or not it's really tough for them to come in and register, whether we charge them for doing it? And part of the answer is, in order for these people to really reintegrate into society and to be productive members who are employed and pay taxes, who build families, who really are the people that you want to be in your communities, you gotta not just make it difficult for difficult's sake.
J.J. Prescott is a University of Michigan law professor. He was cited as an expert in the U.S. Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling last week regarding Michigan's sex offender registry. Thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you.